Hello, everyone, and welcome to this installment of Masters of Craft.
And I feel that as long as all my needs are met, which they feel really met right now, I don't have to have a lot of more. I don't have to say I have a million followers. That may come. And if it doesn't, the work I do is really meaningful and it keeps me too busy. So I'm not trying to pile more onto my plate. I'm trying to find ways to be more creative and do less. When we all signed up for social media many years ago, we had no idea how any of this would affect human biology and our brains, right? And so we didn't all give our consent to actually become addicted to the things that we're addicted to. And at this point, neural pathways have been formed. And so it's not just as easy as, yeah, I don't care about social media. I'm not going to look today. We feel so much shame when we're just unconsciously opening, closing, you know, without realizing it. But we have to release the shame because this is now a neural pathway. This is now something that we have to combat with the way we interact with our own biology.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to this installment of Masters of Craft. I'm your host, Chris Denson, and I never do introductions like this, but I'm doing one today because why not? Also, I ironed my shirt last night, and then I packed it up, and then it got wrinkled, and I was like, but I wonder where, I felt like this felt like you.
I love the colors.
It felt, yeah.
But yeah, you don't like, and we're kind of in flow.
Yeah, you don't like the lack of smoothness.
You know, like, we come as we are.
Thank you for that. You and I have a relationship that you don't know exists, which in some circles would be considered creepy. In this one, it is not.
Oh.
Because I wake up to your voice almost every morning. How's that feel? Does that feel weird? And for those of you, I'm gonna make it make sense. So for a very lengthy period of time, you worked for Chopra, Deepak Chopra, Chopra Global, as the chief impact officer.
Yeah.
And lead guided meditations on the platform. And like at most weekdays, it's you. It's either you or Roger or I forget the other woman's name who's boring. But no, I'm just kidding. She's nice.
No. I was like, our meditations are amazing. All of our
what
teachers.
A boring meditation.
Ugh, they all give me so much.
So kind of, I mean, what's your nutshell version when you have to explain what a Debbie Brown is?
You're not going to like this answer.
Ooh, I'm not.
I've actually stopped doing that completely. And the first thing I tell people is I don't have an elevator pitch and it's too exhausting to try to come up with a way to place my life into a box that makes sense to the person in front of me. I think overall, I'm someone who is a teacher of spirit and I find ways to do that in a multitude of ways. But I don't know. That question is interesting for me because I think post-pandemic and post us having this like 10-year surge of having to market ourselves in every way and, you know, having to quantify ourselves and title ourselves, and it's just exhausting. You know, I feel like I'm in mastery with who God has called me to be. I'm connected to the things that are meant to matter to me deeply in this life, and I try my best to be of service and to have a lifestyle that I want for my child and myself.
It feels like the highest quality.
No,
it's great. Because it feels like the highest quality definition of the phrase self-centered, right? Self and centered. You know what I mean?
Like, yeah.
And you're not worried about the external perception or translation. Like correct me if I'm wrong, but
yeah.
Like, does that resonate with you?
I think that resonates with me deeply. And, you know, it's funny because when we were off mic, kind of what you were conveying to me was the same thing I feel about myself, which isn't, you know, if I were to look at my life on an outside view, I feel like I'd be a mix of Forrest Gump meets like Slumdog Millionaire. Like, it's just like, sometimes you have so many experiences in your life and so many backgrounds that it almost feels dishonorable to try to make all of that smaller by putting it into a sentence.
Yeah.
But I will say this because I want to have some clarity. You know, I started as an adult. I started a career in broadcasting. I worked in broadcasting for about 15 years in TV and in radio. And always I've been called to the work of the soul since I was a child. I have been so deeply in witness of human transformation. And so that has always, no matter where I worked or what I did or what version of myself I was, there was always this deep connection to understanding human emotion, the human psyche, and how to help people heal. And I would say in the last 10 years, my life has taken me all over the world learning and studying. I have a background in spiritual psychology, meditation teacher. I'm an energy healer across 5 different modalities of healing. And I teach, and I spent the last few years as you shared, the Chief Impact Officer at Chopra Global, helping to expand that mission and get the just mind-blowingly incredible work of Deepak Chopra into different audiences. And for me, that really meant the last few years trying to connect this work in communities of color all over the world, diversifying. I currently consult for a lot of different global corporate brands. I see high impact clients, and I work with all kinds of different artists and creatives on getting unstuck so that they can fulfill their life's purpose, which my deepest hope helps to further inform and enhance the lives of any who consume their work.
So no box. No box for you.
I'm like, how do I say that as like an Instagram one sentence bio that says I do this?
Your bio is pretty extensive, which is I have a trick that I did with it that I'll share with you later. But when did you decide, or when did it happen for you to become this Debbie? Right. I think there's the broadcast, and just to put that in perspective, yeah. I mean, that was no small potatoes, right? Your career in the broadcast industry. But when did you go like, you know what? It's time.
Gosh, thank you for that question. Because I would say probably around 2015 is when I launched my first business within wellness, which was called Karma Bliss. And that's around the time that I started actively daily meditating probably 12 years ago. And then around 2015 is when I was having experiences that was just, it was becoming so exhausting trying to uphold my integrity and my vision for how I wanted to reach my audience. And I had to make a choice. And at that time, there was no blueprint for bringing this kind of work and this kind of conversation to the mainstream. Most of the mainstream wasn't really ready till the pandemic. And so I made a choice and I said, you know, I would rather use my voice, share my voice in the way I feel called, than connect to what others are perceiving as this successful career in broadcasting.
Yeah. I think also, they're two very different worlds. I mean, it's all the same world, right? Especially as you inject your knowledge and experience into it. But, you know, the sensationalism of like interviewing a Kanye and, you know, sort of the public perception of what that means. Then to go like, oh, I'm doing crystals and I'm doing all the woo-woo things, right? Like, was there tension with you or with even the people that were close to you and how they expected you to show up or how you wanted to show up? Because I feel like there's always like a call back to who we used to be. And that could just be a career change, right? Like, oh, I want to be a magician now. And like, I was an accountant, you know, last week. They were like, Joe, you know, those magic tricks suck, right? Like, but then Joe like gets really good at magic. And like, you know, he's selling out arenas, right? So that's a really crazy metaphor, my bad. But like, what was it like in the transition? Yeah. Did you experience any internal tension and or external like expectation?
God, it was so confusing. You know, I think in that time and society, at least in a lot of areas, we've just up-leveled so considerably in our consciousness in such a multitude of ways, like of trains of thought, systems of thought in the last 3 years since the pandemic, right? Like we have explored in the last few years everything under the sun about how we are in our family systems, how we relate to our own mental health, how we relate to sexuality, to all of the societal norms. Like we've uprooted so much. So stuff that seems like, yeah, of course, right now, even just as recent ago as like 2015, 2016, it was a completely different story, you know? And so when I got the call to kind of go into that world full time, I had spent close to 15 years having interviews with every single rapper you can think of, actors, like all kinds of different people, community leaders. And that's something that people saw as so valuable based on their system for success. Right. And for me, it felt like sometimes a prison, you know. And I had this conversation once, and I've shared this before, but I was interviewing just a really remarkable artist, and we got into this expansive conversation. This was 2014. We got into this expansive conversation about suicide ideation and depression. And at that time, I used to have a community show as well on Sundays, where I had hired myself a psychologist to come with me. And for 4 years, we did the show, and we'd talk about current events and then try to like unpack the psyche. Nobody was checking for it, right?
Nobody
was checking for that at the time. You know, it was kind of like, you're talking about what? Okay, but who's dating who? And it came to a head for me when I had this, just this exceptionally deep conversation. And I was told I couldn't air the interview because it would be boring and no one wanted to hear it. And I remember the person, one of the people who was kind of in charge at the time where I was like, why didn't you ask about groupies? Why didn't you do this? And I'm looking around, I'm like, I'm a grown ass woman. Like, what are you talking about? What are you talking about?
Right.
And that was the piece where I just said, okay, I don't care if people don't get what I'm doing. I don't care if people don't value what I value, or are impressed by the things that move me, but I just have to do it no matter what. And so that was the step for me. That was the piece. And when I first started, I think I wrote a book on crystals in 2016, released it in 2017. I had a crystal collection in stores at Nordstrom stores nationally. And, you know, the biggest feedback I was getting from my community was really just like, what? Okay, you know, Debbie wants you to sit down and be quiet, or she's playing with rocks. And, you know, it didn't
with rocks.
Yeah,
big rocks.
It didn't make sense to others. But, right. You know, the one thing that I'm so grateful for in my personal journey is I have never lacked in self-trust. And I think that has been one of the greatest gifts that God could have ever bestowed upon me, irregardless of all the other, you know, challenges that we all face, all the other sometimes considerable experiences that you have to move through. Self-trust has just been innate to me. It's been never questioned.
Right.
So in a second, I'll be like, yep, let's close the chapter on that entire life and start a whole new life in this lifetime.
I mean, a lot of people, there's so much to unpack in that anecdote. And, you know, one of the first things that I thought of was just the fact that if you were doing that show for 4 years, it was almost preparing you for, you mentioned the pandemic a couple times, right? Like what shift was going to happen. There is that idea of self-conviction. And I keep thinking about that through an entrepreneurial lens where, I don't know, you take somebody like Travis Kalanick or, you know, anybody who's done like a disruptive business in society, and they go like, yeah, but this is going to be a thing. Trust me.
Yeah.
Right? And like, the feedback that you get is always going to be in opposition to that by ratio, right? There's going to be like, yeah. And then for every yeah, there's going to be 30. Like, I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, go ahead. Sorry.
I love what you just said there. Like, I resonate with that so deep. And I think that, you know, for me, when I got that feedback, right, like it can always be like fun and entertaining to talk about, you know, the challenges or like the quote unquote haters or the people that, you know, didn't believe. But in actuality, it's like that to me is one of the biggest signals that you're on the right path, right? Because it's like I shouldn't be thinking things that everyone else is thinking right now. I'm not led by groups. I should be seeking out those kind of breakthrough thoughts, those bridges, those connection pieces that make me understand this human experience differently.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think a big thing that came to me early when I realized that some of what I was doing made sense to me but didn't seem natural to other people, it was just being willing to let go of my audience and say, you know, I'm not going to try to fight to keep people. I'm just going to release it and allow whoever is meant to consume the work that God has put on my heart. I'm going to create space for new community, for new people.
Yeah.
And that takes time, and a lot of rejection happens in the midst of it, but it happens.
Well, also, like, letting go, in my opinion, is one of the hardest pieces of the puzzles of growth.
Yeah.
Because it's sort of ethereal, right? Like, it's like, oh, I know how to do this thing really well, and I'm highly respected for it. I've been rewarded for it. and it's almost expected. Yeah. And then to like, there's another quote that I love, which is, it's not that people don't like change, they don't like transition. And it's just like, and my favorite anecdote from that is going to the grocery store and there was self-checkout. And I was like, I don't want to check out my own groceries. Like, what? I don't work here. And to that one time I was in a rush and I was like, oh, skip this line. And I was out. And I was like, wow. Right. And so, you know, or you take that into the artificial intelligence conversation. We're in a big season of change. And a lot of people are getting really uncomfortable and systems are like shaking. And so I don't have a question there. Yeah. It's just a reflection on what you just said.
Yeah, absolutely.
Do you want to ask me a question about it?
I feel like I do. I think I'm going to have a few as we continue.
No. So the other part of this journey, right? Like, you've built a very powerful business and brand in this space.
Thank you. You
have to put a business hat on at some point. And like, yes, you can wear your crystals and meditate and do the thing, but then you have to take action and do a business plan and, you know, promote and market and do all the things that, you know, might feel counterintuitive to where you want to live, the space you want to live in. What was that like for you? Like, growing the business of Devi Brown versus like, I just want to be in my space and do what I'm good at.
It is something I'm constantly observing and looking at. I don't have a solution for it yet. It's something I think for me, something I had to get very clear about was that I don't have a desire to be a CEO. I don't have a desire to scale a global company. That may happen. And if it does, I believe that God will lead me to the exact inertia needed to make that happen and the support needed.
Physics words.
Yeah. Okay. And the support needed to make that happen. But, you know, I understand societally we are in such an entrepreneurial space, which is phenomenal because my God, have we needed to destroy this work template we've existed on for the last 100 years. But I think I have to be very true and real to myself. Like, that is not a desire of my heart. My desire is to teach. And so I can create the structures, and very gratefully, I've lived a life that has given me a lot of experience and a lot of mastery in certain things and a lot of connections and business acumen. So I have very strong business sense, but something that is challenging, I think, for people that work with me is that marketing is not important to me. I trust that the work I want to do will reach who needs it. I'm not looking to get everyone because I don't want to teach at the introductory level. I do think that that need is being met by a lot of people right now. I like to teach advanced meditation. I like to teach kind of the next tier on how to break through to those deeper layers of yourself. And that requires really deep presence from me. And so that was a struggle. The first few years of being an entrepreneur, it was frustrating because I didn't connect to the ways that it has been taught. In no way, shape, or form will you ever see me burning the candle at both ends to try to make it happen. I feel that what I've built is enough. When it's time for more, Spirit will guide me to it in a way that still allows me to be the kind of mother I want to be to my 5-year-old, to have the kind of presence I want to have in my life, and to have the kind of peace that I want to experience as a woman that's alive.
With such a strong conviction and intuition, I'm curious if there's ever been a moment where you got a piece of advice that later on you regretted not taking.
I don't necessarily think so.
It was great.
Yeah. You know, I think sometimes we not do everything, sure, but I feel so aligned with my life right now.
Yeah.
And I feel that as long as all my needs are met, which they feel really met right now, I don't have to have a lot of more. I don't have to say I have 1 million followers. That may come. And if it doesn't, the work I do is really meaningful and it keeps me like too busy. Mm-hmm. So I'm not trying to pile more onto my plate. I'm trying to find ways to be more creative and do less.
Right. Why did you say yes to coming on this show? And I've never asked anybody that question before. And only because we don't know each other. We have a couple of mutual friends. But, you know, given the types of filters you have for the work you do and where you spend your time and energy, like, why did you say yes?
Let me sit for a second. Sorry. No, I know we can't leave dead air, you know, on a recording, but
I'll just look at the camera.
Until
you start talking.
You know, I think one of the mutual friends that we have is one of my absolute best friends, AJ Rilan. And he was also on my podcast, amazing episode, Deeply Well. But he told me how much he enjoyed being on this show. And he was just very moved by it. And the way he shared his experience with me, I was just like, wow, that sounds like such a beautiful day. So, you know, when I had the pleasure of you reaching out to me, I kind of looked at it and I was like, this seems like it would be a great conversation.
Well, hopefully no regrets.
How much time we got left?
I know, right? Hey, what else do I have here? No, so you've worked with a lot of corporations. I was at an agency for a while and I was like, ooh, we should get her to talk. And then you came by and blessed the crowd.
That was such an amazing conversation, can I just say? And I remember the woman that facilitated the conversation. It just...
Pilar. Yeah.
It was such a beautiful conversation. And I remember that day feeling so excited because so often you're pulled into conversations. And now that this work is on trend, you get a lot of people that just like don't maximize the kind of conversation that we might be able to have.
Right.
And so, you know, it's like, okay, so if we just meditate for 5 minutes a day, that's enough, right? And I'm like, well, I know that sounds good on a TikTok video, but like, no, like build a practice, you know? But yeah, I that conversation really meant a lot to me and it just kind of gave me a little spark. So thank you for that.
And I'll offer up a confession. I did not see it.
What a shame.
I know, but I knew it was going to be good. Because sometimes you're like, here, go play. You know,
you have kids,
you know what it's like. So, but I think when you are trying to change corporate structure or, you know, a corporate structure wants to change, you've worked with Fortune 500s. I feel like in a lot of learning and development spaces inside companies, like it works for about a week or a month or half a year, maybe at best. And then there's like this reversion back to how we were operating. And that could be just like diversity and inclusion or a new accounting system 100%. Or whatever it might be. And like, we got rid of it because it was taking too much time. What are some of the biggest hurdles to having this implemented in a really longer and stayed way?
The environment has to be really receptive. And what you're speaking to is very true, right? When things become part of like the cultural zeitgeist or become on trend, a lot of people are just racing to try to tick things off the list that everyone else is doing. I feel incredibly grateful because the companies that I have had the privilege to work with are really desiring at the deepest level this work. Like there is such a strong belief and commitment over time to seeing it executed. Mm-hmm. I think there's so many misconceptions in this space because again, there are so many things that have to change about the way that we work, right? Individually, there are so many things that have to change about the way that we program ourselves in work and in our personal lives. So it's just such a layered and complex kind of beast. And I think for a long time, a lot of companies, when we use the word wellness, and I know wellness right now is evaluated something like $5 trillion as an industry, so much falls under that umbrella. Wellness as a business encompasses fitness and encompasses like CBD, diet, meditation, like it's just mental health, emotional health, so many things. And so that is the core of what you have to understand as a company. What is it that you're trying to shift? Because if you just say wellness, that is everything.
Right.
But within wellness and well-being, it's believed that there are four pillars, technically a secret fifth pillar. So that's mental, physical, emotional, spiritual, and community. So you have to get clear on what is the need, not only that I want to fill, but what is the need that is possible to fill given the structures at play and all the other structures within ourselves and within society. So I think for a very long time, a lot of companies were looking at it specifically from the fitness end. So 10 years ago, the way a company would enact like a wellness program, it would be about getting everyone to lose weight together. And you'd weigh in on your lunch break, and everyone would talk about if they did their 10,000 steps and if you, you know, have this. I worked at a couple companies that were doing that all the time. We were all drinking the same protein shakes and, you know, and clearly that hasn't aged well. Could you imagine? Like, yeah, let's weigh ourselves in front of everyone.
Yes, exactly.
So for me, the area that I like to work within wellness is how do we nourish someone's mental health? How do we nourish their emotional resilience and their capacity to be creative? That is where I like to lean, and that still is only a piece of the whole person and the whole ecosystem. But they have to be committed to a top-down approach. It's not just about giving something to your entire employee bank. And it's kind of like the thing of parent, you know, when you're raising kids, like, do what I say, not what I do. When has that ever worked, right? Like your child, that's gaslighting. Like your child is not going to be able to master a skill, a presence, an ability, if it's not actively being role modeled and supported in every other structure of how they're able to be themselves and show up. And so I love taking that same approach with the companies that I work with.
Well, I think it's also, it also has to be like, you have to be unapologetic about what your bottom line is, right?
Yeah.
Like getting together and blah, blah, blah. Like at the end of the day, you want more productivity.
Yeah.
You want to earn more money. Right. You want to get your product into the hands or your service into the hands of more people.
Right.
And, you know, you want to grow your business or at least sustain it, right? And so I think we want to enter it with the language of the culture and the moment. And it's like, oh, we want to do a wellness program. It's like, because, you know, and I think there is something to be said about, like, we want everybody to be able to keep their jobs. Like, there's some transparency that could be had. I was at an agency for about 5 years where I ran the innovation practice there. And I told our president one day, because I was like, we do a really great job of telling everybody good news.
Mm.
Oh, we won this account, or this happened, we got this award. Like, an account goes away, everybody's just whispers and like tension in the hallway.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just like, what do we do with those moments? Like, what do we do with the tough, you know, moments that require honesty?
That is so beautifully pointed out, because I think, you know, something that I've come to, and I speak about this a lot with the CEOs and the companies that I work with, it's all we're doing in any work environment that we're in is repeating whatever spiritual curriculum we haven't completed within our own family systems. So if you're at home and you had a certain kind of relationship with your parents or with your spouse, you are role-playing those exact same dynamics at work. You are, you know, for some people that looks like if you had a parent you were always trying to please, now you're always trying to please your boss, and your sense of self-worth and your emotional regulation is tied to how your boss or how the people you're viewing as authorities are perceiving you and receiving you. And, you know, it's just, it's, in the spiritual world, you know, there's the thought as above, so below. And it's the same thing. Our personal lives to our professional lives, they are never that different. We are always enacting the same kind of patterns that are longing to be looked at and released in both.
Yeah. So we're sitting inside this 30,000 square foot Verizon Innovation Lab currently. And I can't help but think about like the relationship between technology and mindfulness, right? Like, I was going to say didactically, but I've never used that word before, and I don't know if I used
SAT
it correctly.
Word, great word.
I know. Well, let's see if it's right. You guys, go out there and Google it and tell
I've
me.
I've been called didactic, yeah.
Oh, what does it mean?
Okay. I don't know if these two, it's same root word. I don't know how well they go together, but it's just kind of, I don't know, for me, the way it was related was like the way that I pronounce things or the way that I kind of time my words or space it.
So I probably used it wrong.
Do you have a phone? Can we Google?
We could. Caleb, do you want to look up that?
Didactic.
Caleb's going to join us in a minute.
In the manner of a teacher, particularly so as to treat someone in a patronizing way.
Oh, no.
Or to teach.
Or to teach.
Okay, or.
Either way, I used it wrong. So my point is, they are diametrically opposed.
Well done.
Look that one up. Diametrically opposed, because, you know, yes, we have our devices in our hands all the time, but then, like, we started this conversation, like, that device is also what helped me get my sort of mornings and days started and change. Mm-hmm. So we can discover more things. We can Google things immediately. But also, we should probably take a break and not touch these things at all. So when we're talking about artificial intelligence or augmented reality or, like, more and more screen digital engagement, how have you found your work affecting, like, society's relationship between technology and detox?
God, it's so hard. It's hard. I think, you know, I like to try a lot of, I am obsessed with biohacking and meta learning everything that comes into my curiosity. Takes a lot of my time. But one of the things that I've been kind of testing out is a few different devices that are coming on the market to kind of support that. And, like, one of them is the Light Phone. And I've really enjoyed kind of playing with that, because what I crave is being able to have the ability to communicate, but not feeling, when we all signed up for social media many years ago for some of us, like 15 to 20 years ago for my first platform, we had no idea how any of this would affect human biology and our brains, right? And so we didn't all give our consent to actually become addicted to the things that we're addicted to. And at this point, over a decade in, neural pathways have been formed. And so it's not just as easy as, like, yeah, I don't care about social media, I'm not going to look today. We feel so much shame when we're just unconsciously opening, closing, you know, without realizing it. But we have to release the shame, because this is now a neural pathway. This is now something that we have to combat with the way we interact with our own biology.
I think I have an additional thought there, because the word metaphysical pops up a lot with your, you know, almost like synonymous with your craft. And that's something I've been, like, diving a lot more into. For instance, I had out of nowhere, crazy lower back pain yesterday. I'm relatively healthy. I'm like, you know, AJ and I go to yoga. So I was like, what is going on? And to the point where I looked up the metaphysical definition, and then I found myself in a happy baby pose and being meditative last night, and it's like 98% gone. Like, but I was, like, stumbling around, like, couldn't lift stuff. And then I was, as you were talking about that, I recalled a story where, like, my hand was hurting because this is my phone hand, and it was just, like, extreme pain. And I realized it was also the information that I've been absorbing in addition to just, like, the bad posture of your hand. Like, I was playing bass guitar. But, you know, this is just a conversation. So, like, I don't have a question there, but, like, this biology changing mechanism that you talk about is pretty fascinating.
God, yeah. And it's just, you know, I guess another tool to bring us back to our awareness of our inner world and our body's responses to things. But something I've been trying out, because, you know, as a mom, I can't just leave my phone and be in the world. Like, we're actually kind of, if you live in the modern world and you're not off the grid, the ability to leave your phone behind is becoming rarer and rarer. For instance, in some places where there are trains and subways, they no longer have the schedule listed. You have to do a QR code to find out what train you need to get on. Even when I'm at home, like, I went out of my way to buy clocks for every room of my house so I did not have to have my phone near me. And then I want to set up my sound machine to go to sleep or get in my sauna, and guess what? I can only turn it on with the app. There's no longer buttons on things to just turn it on and off. Right. So it's like, we are going to have to get a lot more strategic and creative about disconnecting from those things. But Light Phone is something that I really like, because it lets me put my SIM card in and I can use the phone and send basic texts, but it's not a smartphone. For me, as someone who is so deeply curious all the time, I'll think of something and then spend an hour researching it and going on a deep dive. I love that this keeps me from doing that all the time. Mm-hmm. And something else that I've been enjoying is I got this box, and I forget, oh, I'm so sorry. I forget the name of it, because I actually really enjoy it. But I think it's called, like, a mindful box something. It has a timer on it. When I in my workday, which if I happen to be home, I try to completely end my workday by 4 and then just take 4 to bedtime for my son and I. I put it in and I set a timer for 4 hours and then I put it in the kitchen. And so could I pry it open? Could I get out a tool and break it to get my phone if I needed right. it? Yes. If I'm going that far, that gives me more information I need about what I should be doing for myself. But that has been really helping me fight the very natural urge to be constantly connected.
Yeah. You mentioned your son a few times, and when I look at your social media, I don't see a kid.
Yeah.
And I get the feeling that that's by design and counter-cultural to most parents. It's like, oh, I took a picture of my kid at the park, and like, I'm gonna put it on. And I've heard people talk a lot about like permission. I want my kid to give permission to have their image used, publicized. And I don't know if that's a rule you abide by, but like, how do you want your child to grow up in this era of social media and technology and the work that you do from a mindfulness standpoint?
Well, if my son ever happens in some year or time to come across this interview and sees his mother, I love you so much, Quest, and I am doing my absolute best. You know, it's the thing you said about consent is so deep to me. I was actually kind of on a Twitter talk unleashing about this a few weeks ago. It's something I think about a lot when it comes to my son. And when he was first born, I really had this deep intention to like never share him on social. But then I really wanted to share the special experiences I was having, especially in that first year and 2 years. So sometimes I would share him. It's a couple of things. It's about consent for him. He's not yet at an age where I have gotten the consent or got a full understanding of who he is to know how much of his life he'd want to have anyone to have access to. I'm also very aware of the fact that anything I share, it is through my lens. And by broadcasting that out to hundreds of thousands of people and to him, I'm creating this narrative about him before he's even started to become himself, you know? And so just those subtle ways that we influence our children, I'm very, very aware of. It's the most important thing to me about my child is that he has the freedom to be himself in whatever ways that means, and that he feels accepted, loved, and supported in whatever that is. So the consent thing is a piece for me. And then there is also a piece for me that says, I don't have a private page that is just me and my family and friends. Those are the people I like to share my son with. I could potentially have content and get more followers by sharing my son's face. He is like extremely delicious. Like he is so beautiful, this little boy, and such a delight and so smart and utterly hilarious. Like he'd be a favorite. But, you know, there, I share my work on social media. I share art on social media. I share things that I feel are meaningful. Something I think about a lot is it necessary for me to share the most important parts of my life with an audience of people I have never seen and that are not a part of my life.
Right.
You know, my boundaries in life are important, and I feel that all my relationships are deeply reciprocal, and it almost sometimes feels like energy leaking to overshare for me on there. If we haven't built a rapport where either of us have the right to speak into one another's lives, to draw assumptions, to create perceptions about each other, that's not an area I want to share.
There's times I'm like, I'll go through some random social media account. You'll find a picture, like I'll find a picture of myself, and I'm like, hey, look at all of us. And I'm like, I don't like that. Like, it's a little, you know, a little lower bar. But I'm like, I don't like that picture of myself. I barely know you. Like, there's this sort of, it does feel like a slight violation.
And that's a piece that's interesting to think about, right? Because now we're in the nuance of how social media has actually affected our lives and our perceptions and our narratives. And I think that that's something I talk about with my friends. You know, I'll let them know, like, hey, I'm not really comfortable being content. I don't want to be content today, so I don't want to perform. You know, it's like, yeah.
Speaking of content, you, there's one of your, on your Instagram, you talk about inspirations. And Tupac and Georgia O'Keefe were the ones that stood out to me because, again, I think they're diametrically. Did we use it right? Diametrically opposed, but they, you know, they're two forces.
They?
I don't know, but that's what I want you to explain, like why those two individuals. I'm sure you have others, but like those are the two that kind of caught my eye.
Yeah, those two, especially Pac.
And there was
those
a lot of Pac.
Really
yeah,
big
I was
for
like,
me.
Okay.
Yeah, Pac has been like a deep inspiration for me since I was probably 11 years old. Like he has never left my thoughts since I was 11. I think for a variety of reasons, Tupac. I think Tupac is just such an exceptional artist and teacher. And Tupac had, it's very clear that he had a certain experience growing up that gave him a lot of self-inquiry and a lot of inquiry of the world. He had a deep curiosity. He was a revolutionary. And at a young age, when he was faced with seeing the contrast of human existence, right? Like his mother was a panther. He grew up in that. She also did drugs, which probably for a large period of his life meant that he may have been neglected in certain ways that other children are not from that experience, right? You then flip it into he is an absolute artist and he was a prodigy. You know, he went to these art schools. He wasn't just, you know, like in the hood or speaking to violence or speaking to kind of materialism. Like he was studying and reading art from masters. And he lived such a dualistic experience. And I think I really related to that. I've lived a very dualistic experience. It's how I see the world. And so in the music that Tupac shared, I thought that he conveyed, I didn't know this at the time, this is adult language, but he conveyed the full spectrum of human emotion. You know, Pac was not perfect. We can all agree on that. He was a man. He was flawed. He was, the majority of his work was completed by age 24. 24. 24.
Yeah, I put that in perspective. That's wild.
You know, so it's just, I have such a reverence for what Pac was able to create on Earth, how he was able to share it, and also living this life as someone that made not the best choices all the time and extraordinary choices in other ways. So that's how I see Pac. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, Georgia O'Keefe, I'm into the dualistic experience. One, her artwork since I was a child, her and also very specifically Frida Kahlo, their artwork moved me.
Not Big Frida.
Okay. Well, I do love Big Frida, but Frida Kahlo. You know, they're two women that created art and lived in mastery in a time that that truly was not available to women. They took a path that they had never seen expressed before, and to have the courage to create art, to dedicate yourself to the mastery. They're two of the best that have ever lived. And they both told a lot of stories through challenge, through pain, through creating themselves. And I think especially with Georgia, something I think about a lot, one of our great American artists is, I remember I found these photos of her online. I had gone to Santa Fe. I was actually there with a really brilliant healer and we were doing some work and I went into the city and she lived right outside of Santa Fe for about 40 years of her life until she died. And I remember I found her museum, the Georgia O'Keefe Museum in the heart of Santa Fe. And I walked in and I saw these images and there were these nudes of her, which led me to kind of like do like this deep dig. There are these photos of her taken in 1912. They're very like sensual, kind of poetic nudes. Mm-hmm. And looking at her as a woman of 1912, right? Black and white images, but she had some of the same invocative posing and body movements of like some of our most embodied feminines today that we see, you know, them in that expression. And it just stopped me in my tracks. Like, to take that in, a woman, and we weren't, I don't believe we even had the vote at that time.
Yeah, no, there's so much, like, most, 100% not where
most women couldn't have their own checking accounts till the 70s or 80s, right? Without a man. So it's like, think of the context of what it is to take up that much space as a woman and be that much yourself and be that creative unapologetically. So that, I loved that. And then I think about often, actually, the fact that somewhere in her early 40s, she moved to a town that only had 100 people living in it and spent the rest of her life there in a little adobe and sleeping on the roof of her adobe under the stars for like the next 40 years. Like, people like that just get me going.
Yeah.
People that just understand the way God wants them to express whatever it is, whatever the gift is, and they just say yes, and they don't connect to these societal expectations. And sometimes you're celebrated while you're alive, and sometimes it's not for 100 years till after you're gone. But to me, that's what purpose is. It doesn't matter when people get it. You're just meant to share it.
Yeah. That's the most impassioned you've sounded in this conversation, aside from the bit about your son.
Are you thinking right now how long-winded I am?
No. I was like, I still have a comedic brain. I always want to, like, interject with, like, ha-ha. But also have, like, the depth of, wow, that's pretty intense and amazing. I keep thinking, actually, I want to bring Caleb over here because I want to fix him. I'm going to fix you.
You want? Yeah. I mean, please.
No. I'm going to speak for you a little bit, and then you can.
Okay.
You can jump in, because my co-producer, high functioning, creative.
Some days.
ADHD. Yeah, what else you got? What's your cocktail of problems?
ADHD. I was diagnosed in second grade, and then Tourette's and OCD diagnosed in seventh grade. And I also have central auditory processing disorder.
I didn't hear that one, but that one's like a
minor variant of it.
The acronym for that is SAD.
Actually, I think it's CAPD. Kept.
Oh, dang it!
Central auditory processing.
I can't do anything.
Where did you get SAD? Central.
Sensorial. That's what I thought you said. Sensorial.
Are you thinking of what is it? Seasonal anxiety disorder?
Nobody knows what's going on inside my brain.
Okay. I have a lot of acronyms. It's whatever.
Yeah. But I think a lot of what Caleb just mentioned, like, is common in the world, and especially if you're working inside of an organization and there's 10,000 people working for this company, like, a high percentage of them may have this. And when it comes to, like, mindfulness practices and understanding sort of what do you call it?
Neurodivergency?
Yes, thank you. I knew what it was. Neurodiversity. How does that play into the work that you do? And I know where are we with that?
I mean, I have self-diagnosed ADHD as an adult, and I have CPTSD. So these things are often programs that are running in a lot of us. In some ways, a lot of my greatest gifts come from all of the symptoms that come forward from that. That's what makes me creative. That's what makes me a meta learner and able to kind of see things, multiple things happening at the same time, and find the connection to them. So I think it's something that's really benefited my work, because it helps me get in deep with people, right, and understand them as a multifaceted kind of being. And from the same lens, it means I require sometimes quite a bit of recovery in between work. It's changed the way that I work. I can go really hard for a few months, and I might be traveling, and I might be leading a retreat of 400 people, or leading a retreat of 10 people, or creating, you know, some kind of well-being campaign. And then I will have to disappear for like a month or 2 months and just get my creativity back. And for me, what that looks like is just really nourishing myself. Like, I'm in that, July has been that space for me. I took the majority of July off because I rev up quite a bit in August. And so every day I do a cold plunge. Every day I gift myself 2 hours worth of meditation. I'm really focused on my body's health right now. And so I think, you know, when you are a person that identifies as having multiple acronyms to the way that your brain functions and your emotional world functions, it's really about kind of implementing that same depth of creativity that kind of makes you awesome in all the ways that you're awesome, directing that towards the ways you choose to care for yourself. How can I be creative about me? How can I be very kind of surgical and precisional in my ability to see all the needs that I have and then finding ways to fill them?
I love all of that because I think that's been like the constant, like, you know, when you have a conversation with somebody, and I like to always say the things that I have are not excuses. They're just compasses to, you know, the challenges, the weaknesses I have, the strengths I have. But like oftentimes people, you know, they don't believe in it. They're just like, yeah, it's not real. It's like, well, it's yeah. Well, if you don't experience it, it's going to be hard to understand or fathom what's going on in my brain. Mm-hmm. But like, oftentimes I find this challenge to, like, you know, I'm piecing together things, like people try to give me advice and I'm like, I've done that. That doesn't work for
yes.
me. And they're like, it works for, and I'm like, yes. You don't understand. And I get that and I appreciate it, but like, I have to cocktail what works for me. And
yes.
it's oftentimes really challenging. And sometimes it just, I there's some places I still don't have a solution. And yeah. I think, you know, even to your point, like I just try to take a week off. Like I just came back from Vegas literally yesterday and I tried to take a week off. I remember I took a week sabbatical a few years back and like where I was just off, like no expectations, nothing. And it was so healing.
Yeah.
And I haven't been able to do that in so long because I have like a business. It's like month to month clients. And
yeah.
like this week I even tried to take off and I was texting him and I had an employee quit that was supposed to be taking care of stuff and then wasn't kind of doing their stuff online that they normally did. You know, and it is what it is. I get it. I'm happy they're getting a new thing, but it's like, well, dang, now I'm on vacation and now I have to work.
Yeah.
And I didn't really get to take that time off. And it's been hard to find that.
Gosh, I so feel you. You know, I think kind of where I've landed with it. And I want to express that I know based on the kind of work we each do, who we are, what our lives look like. Some of this could really sound like privilege. Not all of us have the ability to be as flexible with the ways that we create and build our lives mm-hmm. or the ways we're able to care for each other.
Yeah.
But I think wherever you happen to be on your journey and whatever your socioeconomic status is, there are absolutely ways to start pouring in more care for self. Mm. Sometimes we have to deconstruct so many of the other things that we care about. But something that has had me really excited about work since the pandemic is that many of us are completely creating entirely new systems of how we work, and it's allowing us to do more with so much less. And so I know companies right now are all exploring that, right? Like 2 days in the week of the week in the office, 3 days out. That has been revolutionary. Like spending 2 years working from Zoom for some people was really challenging. For others, it's the first time they were able to excel at work because they didn't realize that maybe they had something undiagnosed or they had certain ways that their brain needed to function to be at its best that in a traditional work system was never possible. So I've worked with just so many people where Zoom was the best time of their life where they were able to experience their excellence, their ability to command certain things in the workplace so different. Because taking a meeting while you also have the calmness of your things near you, the smells, the lighting, the energy that makes you feel most yourself, you know? So I think all of us need to continue to look at that. We're in a really special time where a lot is being turned on its head. We have a lot of issues as well, but there is this sweet creative space where we're doing things for the first time and we're creating pathways that never existed. And I think we have to lean into that. And I think, you know, for me, something I shared with you earlier, it was like being very clear, like me saying I'm a CEO is not important. I've run a company and I realized I don't like running a company in that way because it keeps me from being creative. Right. So I need to get the people that can help facilitate and grow my vision so that I can get to what my gifts actually are. But just for you, I would say as much spare time, you know, as you can possibly access, and then find a way to just say, okay, to live my lifestyle in the way that I want to, that I feel the most creative, I know that I'm going to have to wrap my mind around working in this particular way in a very robust way for 4 months. That gives me the access to take 4 consecutive weeks off where things can run on their own and I will not check in. And as we build our boundaries at work and also realize, does this have to be done, or is this my boss being dysregulated? Is this the people I'm around being dysregulated and not knowing how to control their own emotional world that's trying to push me out of my comfort? We got a lot of things to explore right now.
Yeah.
Self-centered. Hold on, I got two more points because we gotta get her out of here.
Yeah, I know.
Sorry, I talk a lot.
No, this is incredible. Well, it's incredible.
To that point, when you mentioned undiagnosed ADHD, my daughter got diagnosed with ADHD in ninth grade, and I remember sitting there across from the doctor, and then she's like, here's what happens, blah, 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 in her brain. And like, literally, I go, like, you're talking about me. Like, I felt like I was like that. I've been able to function through this all this time. And so I was also able as a parent to kind of like do what parents want to do, is like help guide, help them steer the ship a little bit.
Every time we get that deeper information about ourselves, it makes us better for every single person we touch. Mm. And I think so often we avoid going to doctors to find out about these certain kind of tics that we have, because it's this idea that something is shameful or wrong, and it's like, no, it's all of us. Like, all of us, you know, so like hundreds of millions of us, you know?
Yeah, no, it's also like, I mean, there's a ton of generational differences, right? I'm sure my mom or my dad or my grandmother probably had the same thing. And, you know, you definitely didn't go to the doctor then, let alone know what to call it.
Also, we think about so much more now, you know, than our ancestors did. Like, someone had a quote, and I'm so sorry, I don't know who to attribute this to, but they said, people, you know, our ancestors 200 years ago, the amount of things we think about in a day is what they would be processing in their brains over the course of their lifetime.
Mm. I started watching...
That is insane.
I started watching 1923 recently. It's also, they had to worry about different things.
Yeah.
So 1923 and 1883, both those series are like, oh, I guess that is what you had to watch out for during that time. And, you know, there was like one house in Yellowstone, and like, it belonged to one person, and everybody was trying to take his stuff. They had to send a letter for 3 months to get the nephew to come back to take over because the dad had been shot. Like, it was just all sorts of, it's a different set of things to have to process through, and let alone, yes, I 100% agree there's a lot more information. Two words that come so closely related to the type of work you do are purpose and intention. And I feel like they're almost like, and for me personally, in some cases, like waking up from a dream and you're like, I think it's that. Oh, you're trying, like, you want to remember, you're holding on to like a bit of a thing. And setting an intention, whether it's during meditation or for the day or for the year, what are your thoughts around identifying an intention and or a purpose, and knowing to the level of conviction that you have in your life that that is the direction?
I think first we have to be clear on how we we have to be clear on how much we know about something and the ways that we're defining it, right? Because very often the ways we connect to a word, someone else has an entirely different use or meaning for it, or way that they experience it. So when it comes to purpose, some people that are using the word purpose are seeing it solely as a job title, and they want what they're viewing as purpose to be supported by a job title that also gives them a certain amount of income, prestige, or creates a perception around them, right? That is not purpose. I believe that purpose reveals itself over time, and it's constantly evolving. Purpose to me is a sum of our life experiences thus far, the challenging and the good, our innate gifts, the things that we are inherently good at, our skill sets that we've amassed up till now, because that shows, I believe, the pathway of God and the universe seeding our abilities and giving us understandings about things over our lives. You know, then, and all the wisdom we glean from it and how we're able to be of service with it. So for the way that I look at purpose, that means that, my God, there's purpose in everything. And any kind of, you know, quote unquote job we may find ourselves working, you know, it's like everyone is quote unquote career obsessed now, purpose obsessed. Anything you do, can be not just purposeful, but like profoundly purposeful. Mm. You know, it's about understanding what you are and how to use that in service, and what skills have you acquired on the way. So I think if I look at the totality of my life, I have not always gotten it right. My God, not even close. And I think I've always been living in my purpose, because everything that I've done has utilized that. I've used things that I'm inherently good at, which is intuition, seeing, observing, understanding, communicating, right? I did that in service to an entertainment industry at one point. And then now I do it for a global app, and I help people connect by using those same abilities to share meditation. So that's my view on purpose. And I think my view on intention is, as you open yourself to a practice, whatever that practice is, you deepen your experience with everything that you attempt. And so I think at the very beginning, when you first learn about intentions and the power of intention, it could be as simple as, my intention is to have a good day. My intention is to be responsible. My intention is to love. I found that the more we know ourselves, the more surgical we're able to be with the power of intention. And you can use it to transform literally any and everything about your life. Last night, it's so deep that you brought this forward, because last night I had one of the most powerful intention setting sessions for myself that I've ever had. And I came to it on accident. I always meditated in the morning and at night. I was having my evening meditation after I put my five-year-old to bed. And it started as just kind of like a standing, eyes closed, really centered meditation. And I was connecting. And then all these breakthrough thoughts started coming in about areas I wanted to feel more supported in myself and things I wanted to learn. And so I just started for an hour, without stopping, like speaking intentions out loud that were so specific. And when I finished, I just kind of had like this joyful tear in my eye. And I was like, oh, thank you, God, for showing me how to do that. Thank you, God, for giving me this new style of communication to express these things, these longings of my heart, you know? And so some of those intentions were just, you know, very, very specific to my life, which were, you know, my intention is to repair with my son in real time. Anytime I get it wrong or anytime he feels unseen, my intention is right now, I've been really passionately humbled by and enjoying this cold plunge, this daily cold plunge practice I've been doing. And it's really taught me a lot about myself. And so I keep saying my intention is perfect health and any pathway that gets me to that. My intention is to be present with how challenging this cold plunge is for my body, and to learn and to accept it and to do my best. And so by being that intentional and that specific, I believe it takes some of the pressure off, and it builds our awareness of where we'd like to see change in a way that makes us participants in it.
And finally,
that was a lot.
No, I know. And I'm like, ooh, I wish we had more time. You're so far, you're the only guest that's been on the show who has the word master in the same sentence as their vocation. But what you just expressed was just like another layer of learning and, you know, discovery. What do you feel like you still have yet to master? And
probably everything, you know, probably everything. I think there's probably so much I haven't even thought of yet that I may want to attempt one day. And I'm in constant practice of grace with myself, but there's a lot I want to have a deeper relationship with in my life. There's a lot of things that I want to learn before I leave this planet. Like, I can't even count. There are so many things that I hope.
You want to communicate with aliens?
To learn about. Who says I'm not?
That's what I feel like is next level for you is going to be like outer atmosphere. Debbie Brown, thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much.
Caleb, thank you for sitting there.
Hi, thanks.
Thank you for your mustache.
thank you for this conversation. This was so beautiful.
I'm glad you came by. Yeah, I'm glad we got to do it. So, you know, and now you're not in my AirPods. It's real life. So, no, thank you so much for coming by. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Yeah.